In life, we either all win or we all lose. You cannot have one group of people winning and another losing, or one succeeding and another failing, purely based on the group that they belong to. We're halfway through International Women's Month, and I'm joined in this episode of Dangerous But Good by a remarkable woman who has shattered many barriers, broken through glass ceilings, and is just a remarkable story. Asnath Mahapa is the first black African female commercial pilot in South Africa. She hails from a village in Limpopo. Beautiful story, beautiful woman, amazing success in life, and just such an inspiration to so many people. Asnath, so good to have you here. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a long time, and it's quite relevant. International Women's Month. Eh?
Yeah, thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on board. I mean, I think the first question to ask is, and we're going to get into all the obstacles and the barriers. You know, I think turbulence is an easy one for you in the air because of what the turbulence you've had in your career. Yeah. But what did it take for you to get to where you are now?
I think grit.
Greed.
Grit. Grit. What is it? G-R-I-T.
Grit.
Grit. Yeah. But I think it's more about being intentional.
Right. Knowing what you want.
Knowing what you want. You need to be intentional because, trust me, when they say that there'll be people who'll derail you along the way, it is very true. So if you're not intentional about what you want to achieve, if your why is not bigger than the excuses, you'll definitely give up along the way.
Right.
Yeah.
So the obstacles have been huge. Huh?
Oh, no. It's unbelievable. We can sit here for 3 days.
Well, we've got some time. Yeah. No, I mean, I'd love to discuss some of this because, as we were saying before the podcast, you know, the pioneer breaks through barriers. For the pioneer, it's very difficult. Yeah. You're the one who gets the headwind. I mean, even just cycling through a forest, you're the one who hits the spider webs.
Exactly.
You know, but you make the way for those behind you. And, you know, honor to you for doing that. This podcast is all about being dangerous but good. And, you know, I can say you are dangerous to sexism. You're dangerous to racism. Yeah. You're dangerous to stereotypes. Yeah. You know? You really are at cost to yourself.
Yes.
And I look forward to talking about how you've smashed some of those barriers. But you've shattered, I mean, two very big barriers. The one relates to race and the other one relates to gender. And we talk about intersectionality, but I mean, those two, you know, I mean, black men have had to break through barriers. Women, regardless of race, have had to break through barriers, but you've had to deal with both of those.
Yes.
And you're still dealing with that, you know?
Yes.
People get into an airplane and they hear a female voice from the cockpit, you know, they hear a female African voice, you know, there's a stereotype, there's a perception, and it's painful, isn't it?
Look, it's painful, but I think over time and probably with maturity, because I had to find ways of coping, you know, coping mechanism had to come because I love what I do.
Yes.
And when you love what you do, you have to find ways of, especially when you have, you know, obstacles all the way, you have to find ways of coping with it. And one of the things that, the ways that I cope with it is understanding that it's not personal.
Right.
Because most of the time you get attacked by people who don't even know you.
Right.
People who've never had tea with you or had coffee with you.
They have no idea what they're talking about.
Those are people who actually attack you. Most of the time they are hiding behind a computer somewhere in the world you don't even know about. And you can't even find them. So you can't even confront them.
Cowards.
Cowards. In actual fact, they are cowards.
Right.
So how do you fight something like that? You can't fight something like that. It's impossible to fight something like that. So you have to find ways of coping. And for me, it's understanding that it's not personal. I don't take it personal. If someone says something hurtful, it hurts there and there. But after a while, I always have to reflect. Otherwise, if I don't reflect, the pain stays there. So I have to find ways of, you know, just taking time out to reflect. Why is this person saying this?
Yeah.
And Craig, you and I know that there's only two emotions really in the world. There's love or fear.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have to choose which one you want to live with.
So people who go after other people, people who, you know, racism stems from fear.
Yeah.
And sometimes people don't even know what they're afraid of.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes feel like people feel like they are this species that, that's about to be exterminated. You understand? Which is not true.
No.
It is not true. But we have those people sitting behind a computer creating that fear and making people feel like, oh, my goodness, you know, the white man's time has come to an end.
Right.
It's not true.
It is so not true.
The reality is that women are now saying that we also want, you know, our space in this world.
Absolutely.
And I'm at a point where I'm tired of begging for my space in this world. I deserve to be in this world. So I am in this world. I deserve to do whatever I want to do with my life. So, and this is the message I want to, you know, to tell other women out there that until you stop asking
for permission,
and start taking it.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not going to go anywhere because those people who live in fear are not going to give it to you.
Absolutely.
Instead, they're going to make you feel like you don't deserve to be in that in that space.
To such a degree that you might even start believing it yourself.
Exactly.
And get pushed out of what you'd love to do.
Exactly. And it's amazing that, I mean, I started flying in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
It's how many years later I'm still experiencing some of this resistance.
Amazing.
I'm still being told that I don't deserve to be a captain. I don't deserve to sit in the left seat. So I was told before that I don't even deserve to step into the cockpit for that matter. And then I sat on the right-hand seat of an Airbus and I was still told, no, you don't deserve to be there. Now, can you imagine now I'm actually a commander of this Airbus now? What that means to these people who said, no, you don't actually deserve to fly.
Right.
You're not capable of doing, you know, this thing that you so passionately want to do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not personal.
But ask that, how many women with tremendous potential and the ability to be, and not just pilots, captains, surgeons, etc., actually get derailed because of this kind of stereotyping gender and race?
I think it's a lot. I know some personally who just, you know, couldn't cope. Because sometimes I tell you, it as much as I say I reflect, but there are times where someone says something that is so hurtful that it takes you a couple of hours to get over. Sometimes days.
Sure.
To get over.
And some may never get over it and actually abandon a career which they'd be very good at.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it does derail people's careers.
Yeah.
It does derail people's lives
yeah.
from time to time.
Yeah.
And I think the more we talk about it, the better it will become.
Yeah.
The more we make people aware that there is nobody who feels love inside and show hatred outside.
Right.
And once you realize that, that I cannot be ugly outside if I'm feeling love inside.
Right.
The two don't go together.
No, no.
That's the reality.
Yeah.
So if someone says something ugly and you know it's not true, just understand that person is, there's pain, there's something they're dealing with within themselves. And they've been doing this for so long that they don't realize that they're dealing with pain. You know, I was watching... I like watching motivational, you know, videos, and this taxi driver in New York, he picks up a passenger, and along the way, someone brakes without realizing that the traffic light was, you know, red, brakes in front of them, and he almost hits him from behind. But the same person gets out of the car and starts swearing at the taxi driver, "You almost hit me."
Mm-hmm.
He goes on and on and on, and the taxi driver just waves at him. So the passenger says, "But why did you just wave at him and stay, you know, calm? How did you do that?" He says, "No, human beings are like garbage trucks. They collect garbage all the time, and they let it, you know, fill up. And at some stage, they need to dump it." And you might just become that person.
The dumping spot.
It's the dumping spot. You might just become the dumping spot. So if you realize that you're just the dumping spot for that day.
Right, right.
It's
But, you know, that takes a tremendous amount of maturity and a tremendous amount of self-belief. I mean, for you to push through stereotypical words thrown at you, you know, you can't do it. You're inferior. You're less than. And how can you as a woman? It takes a lot of courage, a lot of grit, a lot of belief in self to push through that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and what I love about you as an individual, I mean, we've known each other for many years, is the fact that you do this with such grace. There's no anger, there's no bitterness, there's no, you know, you do this with grace. You've fought these barriers, you've broken through these, and you do it with humility and with tenderness and kindness, but with an uncompromising, I'm going to make this happen no matter what, you know.
Yes.
And I mean, I think, yeah. I'd love for many, many young women who aspire to the kind of thing you've achieved, not necessarily just in a piloting career, but in any other career, to take, take a feather from your cap and say, well, this is how you do it, you know. Don't take it personally. Believe in yourself. Have a goal. Be intentional. Do not allow anyone to derail you or to tell you lies about yourself just because you're a woman or you're black or whatever the case may be.
Yeah, because it's unfortunately, it's never going to stop. Mm. I mean, we always thought, I think, especially as South Africans, I'm going to come back home now. I'm going to turn it back home. When 94 came, a lot of us believed that this thing called racism
was over.
Was over.
Yeah.
It was the end of it. And we lived, we call ourselves this rainbow nation.
Mm-hmm.
But within this rainbow nation, there were certain things that I believe were not dealt with.
Mm.
Healing, for example, never happened. Healing never took place. We're expected to move from this era to another era without, you know, cleaning up.
Yeah, dealing with the deep woundedness.
Deep woundedness. People are still wounded. And unfortunately, those who are wounded, some of them are bringing up children.
Mm-hmm.
What do? You transfer
absolutely
the pain to your children. How is it that we're sitting more than 30 years later and you have a 25-year-old who's racist?
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Absolutely. The previous generation.
The previous generation has now transferred all of the pain to this 25-year-old who doesn't even know why he's feeling the way he's feeling or she's feeling the way that she's feeling.
Yeah.
We're having high school kids talking about racism 30 years down the line. And it goes back to that. For me, there was never healing that took place. We never actually dealt with the elephant in the room.
Yeah,
we just thought by just saying apartheid is over, then it means everything is okay. No, it's not okay. And you know, I try in our home, to teach, you know, our little girl that, you know, when someone does this to you, you need to separate it. Understand that they're feeling pain inside.
Right.
In actual fact, maybe just bless them and just walk away. That's what I teach her. That's what I tell her to do.
Yeah.
And I hope she'll take that forward to understand that when someone is hurting you, they're hurting themselves.
Right.
But for me, the question is, how do we go back and start healing? Because until we do that, we remain in this country with a lot of anger. Yeah.
Unresolved pain.
Mm. You know, people are very angry. And it's pain. It's not actually normal anger. It's actually pain.
Yeah, it comes out of pain. And the only way to fix that is to heal that pain.
Exactly. Yeah.
But I mean, it takes pioneers such as yourself to lead the way in that, not just in success, but the more subtle form of the success, which is the attitude of love, forgiveness, not taking it personally. I mean, that's much harder, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, you've achieved two things. You've achieved captain status as a pilot. That's technical. And that's skill, that's ability and experience, and you know. But the other thing you've achieved is the ability emotionally to rise above the pettiness, rise above the hate and the anger and the stereotypes, and to model the way. And I'm sure you've won many people over, you know. I mean,
hope so.
I'm sure you have. I mean, you know, we were talking earlier, and you told the story about when you were in training with a white co-pilot, and they came out of it, and he said to you, "I've never had such hard training in my life."
Yes.
And the reason was because the trainer saw you as someone who they didn't want to push through. How could this black woman be an equally good pilot? And so they push you even harder.
Yes.
I mean, that's a more subtle form of discrimination, sexism, that you've had to deal with.
And sometimes you can't even prove it. I can talk to you about it.
Yeah.
I can talk to my superiors about it.
Yeah.
They will pick up that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
But they can't really,
Yeah, it's subtle. Unconscious it's bias in some ways.
Unconscious. Yeah. Look, I must say, change is there.
Yeah.
There is change. It is happening. And for the first time, I think, you know, since I started my career, we have a voice. You can speak up. If you feel you've been treated unfairly, you can actually speak up.
Yeah.
We're allowed to do that. But, I mean, this other lady, we were flying together before I became a captain. And the white woman, she was a captain. And she was treated unfairly. But
because she was a woman.
Yes. And it was funny because the two of us were flying and we were talking about this. But she got so angry that she completely lost it. But to see her stand up and actually address what was happening, for me, that was a breath of fresh air.
Fantastic.
For the first time, we're actually able to just stand up and say, no, call it what it is.
Call it what it is. This is not right. This is blatant sexism, and I'm not going to deal with it.
I'm not going to deal with it. And, and we have the right to say, I don't want Craig training me anymore.
Right.
Fortunately, we've been given those rights now to say, no. If this guy is going to continue behaving this way, I'm sorry, you cannot train me.
So we're slowly edging towards an environment of equal opportunity.
Yeah.
Slowly.
Slowly.
But it's going to take a while. I mean, I want to play you a little clip here, two clips, and get your reaction to it. I mean, they're quite amusing. Well, they're sad and amusing. Look at this one here.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Please, I'm waiting for the pilot.
I'm the pilot for your flight today.
You didn't wire me.
You are the what?
I'm the pilot. I'll be flying you to your destination.
Female pilot.
Pilot!
Well, I'm sure it's the reality for a lot of people. You know,
as I said, it's sad and amusing at the same time.
I mean, I always look, especially now that I'm a captain. Some people know they can differentiate. Some people don't realize that this buzz that we wear, they mean different things.
Yes.
So, and sometimes I walk through, most of the time, in actual fact, we find passengers already waiting as we walk through the gate. And I watch the faces, but in a subtle way. And you see them, they're trying to confirm that.
Is that actually? There's not a stewardess.
That's the person who's actually going to be flying us. It happens so often.
See them start fidgeting and getting nervous.
I was telling you a story where we had to do a go around in Durban. We couldn't land. It was raining so hard.
Yeah.
Because normally we land manually.
Yes.
You see the runway, you go for the runway, and you land manually. And that day we just could not see the runway, in time. Just saw the lights at the end. You can't do that. I mean, that's dangerous. You try to land in a situation like that, you might end up going off the runway. I decided, no, we're going to do an auto land. We come back, we do an auto land. And we did an auto land. And after parking the aircraft, the senior cabin crew came to the flight deck and said, "Skipper, people want to see you. People want to know who's," because they saw me walking through. So now they want to confirm that, you know,
this African woman
is the one who got us safe on the ground. And I was getting all, thank you, as people were leaving. So, for me, it's amusing now. It's not, as I said, I don't take it personal. It's just, it's amusing. And sometimes when that happens and you go through turbulence and you do a good landing and people are like, okay, so, I think slowly
you've won those people over. They've now seen you do it.
Yes.
And now the next time they see an African woman pilot, they'll be relaxed because they know that the stereotype will have been broken.
Exactly. Because one thing people forget is that, flying is, I remember one training captain years ago said, he disagreed, when people ask you, "Is flying dangerous?" Don't say no. It is dangerous.
Yeah. If you mess up, people die.
Exactly. Hence, there's so many safety
protocols,
you know, around flying itself. Otherwise, we wouldn't need to deal with all this, you know, safety all the time. We talk about safety all the time. So because of that, people need to realize that there is no company that will put me in the flight deck if they don't trust me enough.
Exactly.
To actually do their job.
Yeah.
The amount of training we go through to get to where I am today is
incredible. But it's not just technical, it's psychological. It's the whole thing.
Yeah. It's in every 6 months I have to do this training. For as long as I'm a commercial pilot.
Right.
I have to do the training every 6 months. And it's just you have
hundreds, if not thousands, of lives
exactly
in your hands every month. I mean, that's a massive responsibility.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So no one will put me in the flight deck just for the fun of it. Exactly. Just let's see if she can fly this thing to Cape Town and back. Yeah.
Well, let's continue shattering these glass ceilings and these barriers. There's another clip which I want to show you. I'm so grateful that you laugh at this. You know, after this clip, I want to talk about the pain, because there's real pain.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is funny, but it's also painful.
Yeah.
This is another clip.
You got the Ambien?
It's a 2-hour flight.
Yeah.
Hello, this is your captain, Tiffany Jones, speaking. Welcome aboard Flight 428 to Dallas. We're just waiting on ground crew to load the last few bags. We should be pushing back shortly.
Did the stewardess just call herself the captain?
I don't know. I'm trying to find my Xanax.
Hey, Captain Tiffany here again. Ground crew is all finished. Flight attendants, prepare for departure.
The captain's a woman?
Are you serious? It's 2024. Women can fly planes.
Honey, this isn't an iPad. This is the real deal.
Captain Tiffany again. I almost forgot to mention I'm accompanied today by First Officer Morgan Brooks. And oh, wow, would you look at that? It's an all-female crew today. You're in good hands. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy the skies.
Babe, we gotta get off the plane.
Will you relax? They're professionals.
Yeah, so is Amelia Earhart.
I mean, that's just the reality. We laugh about it. I mean, just yesterday, I was flying, the first officer I was flying with is a white guy, and a lot of experience behind him.
Mm-hmm.
But,
and you were his captain.
Yes, but a very cool person.
Yeah.
So we were taking over this aircraft, but the aircraft had issues. There was smoke coming out of it after the engine start, but they couldn't tell what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to work. He says to me, "I don't think we're taking this aircraft." I said, "Oh, okay." Because when we get to work, we have to make sure that the aircraft is serviceable to fly. So engineers, every single time we land, an engineer comes on board to check that the aircraft is and walk around and make sure that it's fine. So I said, "Why?" He says, "No, I just came with this aircraft. I was a passenger on it. And yeah, smoke came out after start." I said, "Oh, that doesn't sound good." Then we start discussing this whole issue. So we then call engineering. Say, "Are you aware of this?" They were not aware of it as yet. They had not gone to the aircraft as yet. Then I said, "Is there a spare aircraft that we can take?" They said, "Yeah, it's there, but it doesn't have a weather radar. So with summer like this, you need to, you can't fly. We're not actually allowed to fly without weather radar." But we checked the weather in the morning and said, "No, the weather right now is good until around 4 in the afternoon. So we can actually go to pee and back, quickly go to pee and back. It's not an issue." But something happened and they decided, "No, we're not taking that aircraft. They're keeping this one that is problematic. They'll check it and..." So they called me and they said, no, it's been sorted. It's signed out, because you can sign it out on what we call MEL, minimum equipment list. So these are the standards. So if an aircraft, for example, if one fuel pump is not working, but you've got a second fuel pump that is working, you can go. But it needs to be recorded that this is what's happening and how long. Some of them is 3 days, it must be changed. Some is 10 days, some is 120 days, but it differs. So we look at each other. I'm like, "Okay, let's go to the aircraft and just find out what's happening." We get to the aircraft and there's an engineer, but it's an old white guy sitting in there. So the first officer explains to him, this is what he saw when they started the engine. And the engineer is like, that doesn't sound right. You know, he couldn't capture the whole story from the book. That doesn't sound right. So the first officer says, imagine we start this engine and it starts smoking. Can you imagine the news? A black female captain took an aircraft that was not serviceable into. But now he's, I understood him. We start laughing. The two of us, we start laughing. It's the realities.
Yes,
he knows me and he knows, you know.
To be headlines.
It would be headlines. This engineer didn't know where to look. He was. This is an old white guy. So he's like, awkward. My goodness. He doesn't know whether to comment or not. He says, no, I'm not going to say anything. But anyway, you're not taking this aircraft. So that aircraft was like, no, you're not taking this aircraft based on that.
Right.
But yeah, I'm at that stage.
Yeah.
You know, there's certain things that you just, I understand where they're coming
from. Right.
It's part of life, but we just keep moving forward because our daughters, you know.
Need you to do that.
Need us to do that.
To pave the way.
To pave the way because 10, 15 years down the line, she wants to do something.
And, absolutely.
And if she can't do it, she'll be like, my mom, aunts, your friends, what were you guys doing? Why are we still going through, you know, things like this?
Well, Rosa Parks.
Exactly.
I mean, there you have a very courageous black woman sitting where she was,
supposed to sit.
And it sparked a revolution.
Exactly. Yeah?
And now it's completely different.
It's completely different.
And it's so beautiful. Yeah. It needs that.
It needs that. Unfortunately, it needs that and a bit of humor in it. Because if you take it seriously all the time, then it just becomes heavy on you. And that's what happens. It becomes really heavy.
Well, I mean, the sad response is to allow it to derail you from your God-given potential and ability and destiny.
Yeah.
And the second sad thing would be to be angry and bitter and actually perpetuate, wouldn't it, you know?
Exactly.
In other words, give power to the people who don't deserve power, you know. You know, when you're angry, you're giving power to the person who's making it. They don't care, you know, they don't care. And it derails you as well, doesn't it? You know? Yeah. So to rise above it.
Yeah, if you don't rise above it, and I've seen it, we've seen it, is with women. And unfortunately, it's a few women who do it. And I think it's from pain as well. They get to the top and they start practicing certain things that, you know, they start doing things that they never approved of when they were still climbing the ladder.
They start behaving like the enemy.
They start behaving like the enemy. And we see it quite often.
Mm.
But again, it's that being conscious of what is happening around you. When people inflict pain, how do you receive it? If you don't understand that, it's not personal. You know, I'll give you an example. Growing up, I don't think it's happening now, but in the old days, so in our culture, you get married. When you get married, you get to your in-laws. Your mother-in-law expects you to behave in a certain way, but sometimes in an abusive way. Like she becomes almost abusive towards you. But if you look back, her mother-in-law treated her like that. But because of pain that she never dealt with and understood that her mother-in-law was in pain, you know,
she perpetuated the same.
And just kept going until we realized that I don't actually want, why do I want to treat another woman the way I didn't want to be treated?
Well, that's powerful. I mean, you're talking about breaking cycles,
yes.
Breaking generational cycles. Yeah. And I think that's what you were talking about in South Africa too. Yeah. You know, we got to break a cycle of pain. You know, you can't just brush it under the carpet.
We can't.
You can't just get over it, you know, because it's, you can't. You've got to work through it.
You've got to work through it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why maybe the world is in such a mess.
We're not dealing with real pain and real issues and real stereotypes that are damaging us.
Yeah, we're not dealing with the root cause. We're just putting a plaster and hope that that rotten wound
heals itself. We look at it, we see a plaster, think, oh, it's all okay.
It's not.
Yeah? And then we have to act like it's okay.
Exactly.
You know, one of my very close friends, Sizwe Molebatsi, he said he learned such a powerful lesson. You know, he grew up under apartheid. He's quite a bit older than me and you. And he had an experience where he encountered on one night two men. One ran him over with a car and left him for dead. And another man picked him up, cancelled his Christmas Eve. He was a doctor. and spent the entire night saving his life. Both were white Afrikaans men. And his conclusion was, you can never say they all are.
No.
And it's a powerful lesson, isn't it? You can never say they all are, you know? So you cannot judge a person by anything external.
Exactly.
Judge them by their character, by their nature, what they do. Exactly. Applies to woman, race, ethnicity. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you name it.
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful lesson. Yeah. And I think you've done that very successfully. Judge people by who they are, how they behave.
Exactly.
You know, that's it. Because there's no other way of doing it.
No.
Because we are human first and most importantly human.
Yeah. Yes.
What are some of the crazy experiences you've had in the cockpit without giving away some secrets?
No. It's not so crazy, but some of the experiences where you get to work and this captain doesn't talk to you until you do a good landing.
What? Why?
Because you had to prove yourself.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, sure. A lot of times I can't count how many times I had to go to work to prove myself. Mm. Every time you fly with a new captain, you had to prove yourself.
As a woman, you have to prove yourself over and over again. It's exhausting.
It's exhausting.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. Mm. You know, every time we went to work. And the sad part for me was that I knew I loved what I did.
Yeah. And you still do, Asnath.
Yeah, and I still do. But there was this painful side of it that was not dealt with.
Mm.
Where every time I go to work, I look at my roster. I mean, you look at your roster because they give it to you like 3 weeks or 2 weeks in advance. And you look at April and you're thinking, my goodness, I'm flying with this guy. and that's how it was.
Yeah.
Or you go into a simulator training, oh goodness, this is my training captain. And so it went on and we lived through it. And but like 70% of the time you look at your roster and like, oh, I can't believe I'm
right. I'm with this guy again.
I'm rostered with this guy, I'm rostered with this one, I'm rostered, you know, and that's the painful part. Because you love what you do, you know, you enjoy what you do. But someone is trying to say you don't deserve to be here every time.
All you want is to be treated as an equal.
When I started flying, I just wanted to fly. That's all. Mm-hmm. That's all I knew. That I just wanted to fly. That's all. I don't. You know, we have different beliefs. I'm not a Christian. I believe I'm a spiritual being. So you can call it God, spirit, whatever you want to call it. Sometimes when you're intentional about what you want, it's amazing how doors just open.
Right.
I'm diverting a little bit. But when I started flying, I started in Polokwane. And it was all well. I remember growing up in the village, we were protected from what was happening in the country. So racism was never on the cards. I didn't know racism. I had no idea what racism was. I went to a Catholic school where it was all African girls, but we had, you know, the nuns were coming from Italy at the time. Didn't we know where Italy was, but, you know, those days. Then I said I wanted to fly. My father refused flat out. No, you're not doing that. He had never flown himself, so what are you talking about? And I went to varsity for a year. And then we had an agreement that if I don't enjoy varsity, will you allow me to at least try this thing? And a year later, yes, I started flying. So I met this guy. And I was so happy that I got to fly him on an Airbus 320. Because he started my very first flight in 1998. And I flew him, I think it was 2019. No. Must have been 2018. I was still in 320. Right. I was not on the long haul yet. And this guy, while I was training, my training was it was not going smoothly. So I would fly today. It's Tuesday. Then they'll tell me, like, for the next 10 days, there's no space. And then I'll fly after 10 days. And I didn't realize what was happening. What is this young African
woman? Was it an attempt to sabotage you?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because if I come back 10 days later, it's like starting all over again.
Right.
It's like you teach your child to drive a car. Today we're learning gear one, gear two. But I'll see you 2 weeks down the line.
Mm.
what do you think is going to happen 2 weeks down the line?
You forget.
She's forgotten. You're starting all over again. And he picked it up. A white man. And he said to me, I think if you move to the school, things will go
much so you had quicker your back, for you.
For some reason. Mm. I didn't know this guy.
Well, he obviously saw your talent. So
exactly. Mm. A white man saying to me, I think if you go to this particular school, you'll progress quite quickly. And I took his word, and I did. I called the school, ended up in PE. And in PE, when I got there, the school had the students there. Majority were from outside South Africa, Holland, Zimbabwe. So throughout my training in that school, I did not experience racism. So that was, and because I had from Angola, from Congo, you know.
And females as well?
So I was the only one for a long time.
Right.
Then another lady joined me. Yes. We are both at SAA now. But yeah, most of the time I was alone. Mm-hmm. It was just the only girl there. And so I didn't experience racism there. So my training went fine. I excelled in my training. I mean, I remember even my test was, it was an SAA training captain who did my test, and the report was excellent. Only after that, then I started experiencing racism. But it was also a shock because I didn't know what I was experiencing. It was not making sense.
Yeah,
I couldn't find a job. And when I found a job, I was told I couldn't fly. And it just became, you're very confused. But then again, while I was going through that, I was told, no, you can't fly, get fired. Then I ended up at 43 school in the Eastern Cape. And they assigned those days it was mostly white men. An older white man. And after flying with me, he said to me, there's nothing wrong with your flying. Said, what are you talking about? He says, no. It's the men you want to sit next to that have a problem with you.
Right. So he recognized that.
He recognized racism. He said to me, 94 came.
Right.
And we sat down and there were agreements that, the black men must start flying. Mm-hmm. We didn't like it. He was saying that to me. Mm-hmm. We didn't like it. But we had to compromise somewhere. So we accepted the black men in the cockpit. And then after that, your government said that we must introducing women. He said, we hated that. He said, but
I wonder which one he hated more, the black or the woman.
Exactly. Huh? He says, we hated that. But we decided, okay, we can accept the white women. We know them. We're comfortable living with them under the same roof. So we can... Mm-hmm. Share. We don't, she says, we hate it. Don't think that we actually like them. We don't like it. We hate it.
Yeah.
But we accepted them. And he said, now you're coming here, and you're a black woman and you want to fly. He said to me, my girl, if you want to continue with this career, it's going to be the hardest, one of the hardest things you're ever going to do in your life.
So he prepared you for the way. Huh?
And that for me actually was like, he fueled me. He was like, I was running on empty.
But he was doing it from the right heart, was he?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. But for me, I just thought it, like a light bulb went on.
And now you suddenly realize why.
What I'm going through.
All these obstacles.
Oh, these obstacles are coming from, now I understand. And that just, for me was just the fight. It was like I was running on empty, and all of a sudden this guy gives me 95.
I'm going to make this happen.
On a V8 engine.
Bugger you. I'm going to make it happen.
I'm going to make it happen. Yeah.
This is probably a crazy question, maybe hard to answer. Which do you think was the more powerful force, the racism or the sexism?
I think sexism, because it's difficult to pick up.
Right.
It's very difficult to pick up. Racism, everyone knows.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people who are racist can't hide it.
Yes.
But sexism is a difficult
more one. More subtle, huh?
It's more subtle because you can sit here and the person is all polite and I've come across men but very well spoken but men.
As a woman, they see you as inferior.
As a woman, they see you as inferior. But the way they do it, some of them, it's... Look, I always say it's like an abusive husband or boyfriend. A lot of them, most of the time, are actually intelligent. They need to be intelligent
mm-hmm.
because otherwise people will pick up that.
Right, right. They hide it well. Huh?
They hide it very well. Yeah. You know, especially those who don't beat you.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, more subtle, more verbal, subtle, more psychological. More
psychological. And so it's the same thing with sexism. That's what I find. It doesn't always come out.
Right. Patently and blatantly.
No,
well,
no,
that's the worst kind. I mean, blatant abuse, it's so easy to pick up.
Exactly. Eh?
But the more subtle forms of abuse are very hard. The
more subtle form of it is very hard to pick up. So you'd have a person and these people would be saying, no, but he's a nice guy.
Mm.
So then it becomes difficult for me to say, no, he's, how to explain that he's actually not.
Right, right.
It's a
difficult. And as you said earlier, there's no tangible proof.
There's nothing. It's you and him at that moment. And maybe the next person who's who's experiencing this whole thing for the first time, but chances are they'll never experience it again.
Right, right.
And then next time around, it's me again with someone else. They experience it for the first time. It's a shock to their system.
Yeah.
Then, I mean, what happened to me with this, the same guy that I was telling you about, 2 weeks later, he bumps into me and said, have you recovered? He says to me, have you recovered? I'm used to this. He had not recovered.
No.
He was still in shock of what he experienced.
Yeah, yeah.
You see? So, and then he'll go on, but he'll never think of it as, what exactly was that?
Mm. You know? Well, because, you know, someone who's never experienced discrimination cannot really understand it.
He'll probably just think that guy was an idiot.
Yeah, yeah.
And it will end there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not the kind of world you live in every single day.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes, no. I mean, any last comments? I mean, look. I mean, again, much respect to you for what you've done and who you are, and
thank you.
The attitude, your demeanor, your grace for rising above it and for shattering barriers that need to be shattered. You know, to make a way. I mean, we want to build a world where everyone is viewed as an equal and given equal opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, men and women are different, and that's beautiful. You know, we love it. I mean, we need each other.
Yeah.
We're not opposite. We are complementary.
Exactly.
You know, we co-create. Exactly. And I mean, that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
But unless we co-create as equally valuable individuals who have absolutely equal opportunity with no artificial barriers, the world's going to suffer as a result. You know, we all win or we all lose. This is not a zero-sum game, is it?
No,
where one wins and the other, you know, it's a game where we all win. And just hats off to you for paving that way. You know,
thank you.
You're a dangerous woman. As I said earlier, dangerous to sexism, to stereotypes, to racism, and dangerous to mediocrity as well. You know, I mean, you do what you do with excellence, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any final comments to inspire the young ladies out there here?
You know, I used to say you can do whatever you want to do with your life. But I think I've grown up now. I've matured. You know, so is everybody. Everybody needs to mature or grow up. But I still go back to the statement I made when we started, that if you stop taking things personal and understand that there is nobody who can feel love inside and show hatred outside, those two don't go together. And every time you experience negativity, every time you experience someone saying something nasty about you, realize that there's two emotions, it's fear or love. So people associate when a man beats you up that he's strong. You know, it's not. It's actually fear. There's a lot of fear inside.
Yeah.
That's why when you stand up to a bully, most of the time they
crumble.
They crumble. It's exactly that.
Yeah.
They crumble. That's why most bullies are now behind computers.
Right.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
They're hidden. Behind computers. They're cowards. Hidden. Some of them don't even use their real names for that matter. So if you just realize and start living from that perspective that there is nobody who's feeling love and is showing hatred outside. I think that has made my life
fantastic,
so much easier.
The power of love.
The power of love. That's it. That has made my life a lot easier. And I'm not saying that you won't feel pain. Pain is inevitable. But living in pain becomes a choice.
Right. Well, power and love to you.
Yes. Thank you.